What's going on, guys? March has arrived, and we are only weeks away from the big tournament. Yes, that tournament. The one where you might catch a glimpse of somebody that will turn things around for the Cavs. Make sure to head to BetOnline and open an account today to get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest starting March 15th. That's right, I said $100,000 and March 15th. You don't need to be a hardcore fan to get in on the action, and with multiple entries available, it's this season's best chance to cash in. And remember, the NBA and XFL are still going strong, so whatever your passion is, BetOnline is the place to be for all your betting needs. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And now, to the podcast.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! It's over! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton. Some rhythm.
And he got it! Young Ball continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network, brought to you by our friends at betonline.ag. Carter Rodriguez is away once again. He's abandoning me, but not all is lost. Making his glorious return to the podcast, you can find him at Kungu_NBA and support Hoops Island at Patreon. Our friend Alex Kungu, how's it going, buddy?
Thank you for having me. I, for the record, I only agreed to this podcast once I found out Al Horford was a Sixer.
Man, you know what? It's funny because I saw the rumor today that the Warriors might look to trade Andrew Wiggins for Al Horford come this summer. And that would really be something for Horford to go from ruining the chemistry of the Celtics to ruining the chemistry of the Sixers to sinking the Warriors. That would really be quite the NBA journey for him, don't you think?
I mean, it would just, you know, kind of complete it, just the complete anti-title. You know, when you think Al Horford, you think losing basketball. So it just makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you think of weird opinions and interrupting the flow that young teams have. It's good to have you back on, man. How you been doing?
Oh, man, I've been good, you know. My basketball life has gone well, so, you know, much better than anticipated, so I cannot complain.
It has been quite the year for the Celtics. I actually mentioned this to you yesterday, and I think it's a fairly common sentiment. I actually saw quite a few people, both in our Chase Down Discord as well as just Cavs Twitter in general, say, man, this Celtics team does have a lot of likable players if they weren't on the Celtics. And I'm still going to get jokes off because I love to kind of poke at anybody that takes sports just a little too seriously. And Boston fans certainly fall into that category. But overall, man, this is quite the team you guys have here. How have you enjoyed this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think we started the year and it was just like, you know, if they did the same thing they did last year, but with like a lower ceiling and it just be more enjoyable, I'd be okay. I'll be all right. So, I mean, I've mostly been enjoying it. I've had very low expectations. I didn't even think they'd be a top three seed, to be honest with you, coming into this year. So it's like the front office just decided, like, we're just going to get a bunch of good guys and whatever happens, happens. And they might have leaned too far into that theory, picking up Enes Kanter, but that's a different story for another day.
You know, I always say Enes Kanter is basically just Jonas Valanciunas with bad PR. Like, that's what it really comes down to. But no, it's been funny. So obviously you come in with low expectations and they've been probably one of the better stories in the NBA. I thought they would be good coming into this year because this seemed like the type of Brad Stevens team that he excels with. Guys that are willing to really buy into the system. The veterans that they do have, Kemba Walker in particular, just always a team player. And I thought that this was going to be a team that's competitive. But as the season has kind of progressed, where are your expectations now with this team? Is it still kind of in found money mode where, hey, we got this young core that's playing well. Marcus Smart has continued to improve and play great. Jason Tatum appears to have first taken a leap on the defensive end to start the season. And then this last 2 months, I would say, you're really seeing that leap on offense. Jaylen Brown's been phenomenal. Where are your expectations at this point of the year?
Yeah, right now they're not too much different. I think I tweeted this a week ago, but I generally just think this whole year, every other team is just a chapter in the Milwaukee Bucks championship run. It's just how I feel. So coming in with that context, I've really just kind of keyed in on Jason Tatum. And as you talked about his leap, that's kind of what the Celtics are building on, because Kemba Walker can't be your best player if you actually have real aspirations of winning in the future at some point. So seeing Jason Tatum kind of take this leap and kind of get to a point where, like, you can kind of clearly start to see, like, it's becoming his team, and you kind of just hope that progresses where next year it's, like, just fully it. And then maybe that's when you make your run. You know, you go into a free agent class that's weak but has a lot of, like, good depth, and we can, you know, talk about the lack of depth on the Celtics. I'm sure Cavs fans watching that game did not know who 80% of the 80% of the Celtics players were. And believe me, there's still Celtics fans who do not know them either. So, yeah.
So it's a little forgivable. I'm just glad that Carson Edwards didn't kill us. Because, my God, I never, ever want to see that guy play against the Cavs again. Like, that is that is the prime example of a Cavs killer. He ruined my trip to Cleveland. He buried us in the preseason and made John Balin just give up on coaching at that moment. I do not want him taking threes anywhere around the Cleveland Cavaliers ever again.
It's hilarious because you guys are probably the only fan base that has that expectation of him. There is literally nobody else thinks Carson Edwards is good. Nobody else probably even knows who Carson Edwards is.
Like, that he exists, yeah.
The only time he ever plays well is against Cleveland in Cleveland. So,
yeah, that's what makes it annoying. It's like that playoff game that prevented it from being a sweep in the conference finals, where Marcus Smart just hit a bunch of threes, and that was before he kind of turned his offensive game around. That was one of the most frustrating performances ever, and I think that there's still some resentment among Cavs fans there.
Yeah, for sure. I was trying to think, like, which gentleman sleep is he talking about? Because you guys have had just so many against us. I was trying to narrow it down to which one specifically you met. But yes, I do remember the Marcus Smart game.
Yes, that came shortly after the 50-point lead, which just forever will be one of my favorite basketball memories. But the Cavs and Celtics actually have kind of had a surprisingly competitive season series. The second game in Boston, I think Boston had a fairly substantial lead and a comfortable lead for most part, but at least it wasn't a 20-point blowout. So by Cleveland standing, from our perspective, that is a close loss. But kind of two closer-ish losses in Cleveland. What did you make of the Cavs after watching them last night? And obviously, Colin Sexton, I would imagine, would be kind of near the top of your observations from that game.
Yeah, I mean, for one, it was very demoralizing because guys like Grant Williams are players that, you know, we kind of were hoping could survive in the playoffs, and just watching him get dusted over and over and over again by Colin Sexton did not feel good as a Celtics fan, if you're thinking that's a guy that could potentially be a small ball five when Enes Kanter inevitably cannot play in a series.
Well, but it almost came really close to the Cavs having wins over Philadelphia, Miami, and Boston within about a week. So that would have been one hell of a stretch for us.
Yeah, and it's been interesting watching. Like, I know on the Celtics broadcast, like, Scal was blown away because it just – you guys – I don't know, maybe you can speak more to this and you have been speaking more to this, but – you guys seem to just be kind of back to, like, looking like a competent basketball team. You know what I mean? Like, Kevin Love was playing well. This guy, Dean Wade, you know, he gets play time, and that's a thing. I really have maybe
G League player of the week, man. Come on. Yeah. Put some respect on his name. The best D Wade to ever play in Cleveland.
Yeah, but like I see like there's like defense, like you guys were making Tatum work. I mean, it was a double team, but it's like there was just this like air of being locked in that you don't normally see from like a team bound for the lottery at this point of the season. So I think if you're a Cavs fan, that has to be like a little bit encouraging, because now you get to see guys like Colin Sexton kind of like continue like his leap and him turning into like an actual player. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like obviously Kevin Love doesn't want to be there, but I think it's good for him to be there just so Colin Sexton can have that kind of like competent pick and roll partner. And eventually when Andre Drummond gets there, you know, you'll maybe have also another competent pick and roll partner as well. But I don't know. I kind of like you guys. You're feisty, you're young, and you just like you play the right way.
The Bickerstaff era has kind of started off on the right foot. I think it's been encouraging. The biggest thing, and I think the reason why you're seeing some buy-in, obviously didn't really have a ton of depth last night, missing Drummond, Thompson, Kevin Porter Jr. went down thanks to Dean Wade, and Darius Garland was out as well. But what the expectation with Bickerstaff kind of now is, hey, no matter who you are, whether you're Kevin Love, whether you're Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, whoever, if you're being outplayed or if somebody's behind you is trying harder, we'll bench you. And Kevin Love's been benched for Larry Nance Jr., who's been phenomenal. Tristan has basically closed out quite a few of the Cavs' wins over the stretch over Drummond. We've seen Colin Sexton get benched, and then other games it'll be Darius Garland on the bench or Kevin Porter Jr. on the bench. They're creating accountability while still kind of looking to give those young guys a lot of playing time, and the losses will come. I mean, the Cavs aren't really at risk of getting too many wins, but especially with this new lottery, you really have to fall out of the bottom five to have really even a meaningful impact on your lottery odds. So why not try to develop it and get some good habits?
So who's accountable for making sure Kevin Porter Jr. has all of his equipment before he steps on a basketball court? That's what I would like to know, because it's getting out of hand.
Man, I did you see his tweet today?
No, I did not.
So he tweeted, basically he quote tweeted a Bleacher Report video that was basically just like a laughing emoji, and KPJ forgot his jersey before checking in. And he had some sort of comment about, I see how the media is. Nobody asks about my head injury that I had. But it's all just a big joke. And just that he's going to prove the haters wrong or something like that. I was like, man, that tweet was one before the head injury, I'm pretty sure. And two, I didn't understand the connection, but whatever you can use as motivation, I'm not going to tell somebody whether or not it's justified.
That I'm just not seeing it. Wow. So yeah, he definitely went there. I think someone needs to, you know, just let him know it's not. I think you, Justin Rowan, needs to reach out to him and be like, look, man, let me tell you something about Twitter. It ain't that serious. I think you might be taking Twitter and Bleacher Report a little bit too seriously. You should never react that way to a BR social media post. So I think you need to get in there.
Well, you know me, I really have no shame, and KPJ has still not DM'd me back about coming on the podcast. So, you know what, I will shoot my shots anytime I can get them, but I doubt that he's going to take social media advice from me. But you know what, whatever he's doing seems to be working out well for him. I can't imagine you've watched a lot of the Cavs this season, though. So I'm guessing the number of kind of real opinions on what's happened there are kind of small. Is that fair to say?
I've maybe watched 5 games and mostly just been watching your feed.
My God, I feel so bad for you going through it that way.
That is how I've been consuming Cavaliers content.
I mean, there's a lot of misery when you're consuming Cavs content this year. There has been reasons for optimism. I'm pretty optimistic with all of the guards this season. But of all the miserable ways to experience this season, my timeline has to be near the top of that list. So I'm sorry that you've gone through that. But moving on from that, I actually want to talk about, we're recording this Thursday night, Rockets Clippers is still ongoing. And to me, those are two of the most interesting teams in the NBA. One, because the Rockets kind of pushed all their chips in the middle of the table. I think Daryl Morey knows that he's not going to be back next season, and this is just kind of one last bucket. But the Clippers currently up, and I'm sure if they hold on to this, the takes are going to flow in. But what have you made of the Rockets' gamble and the way that they've approached this season?
I like it. I really do. I think that it's kind of like Russell Westbrook is low-key kind of looked like the Lamar Jackson of the NFL, where it's like this whole time we kind of, you know, we kind of like pigeonholed him into what we think he is. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly the Rockets just go out of the box completely and say, we're just going to start a 6'5 guy center and we're just going to play like this. Yeah. And then suddenly it's like he's this new guy who's like great. And granted, I'm a Celtics fan. I watched him in the last 2 weeks put 40 points on my team's head. So I may be a little highly optimistic than what it might be actually looking to other people, but I just have been really impressed with just how he looks. Like, he just seems pretty unlocked, and it's not like he's unlocked at the expense of James Harden, which mm-hmm. is kind of what it was in, like, OKC, where it's like when he was paired to Paul George, it was either him or Paul George kind of getting off, or he had to be the one to direct everything and Paul George really didn't have his own kind of space. It's now kind of like they're both just kind of existing and being themselves, and it's just been really good for them specifically. But yeah, continue.
Oh, no, I don't mean to cut you off.
I was going to say, long term, I still don't buy it. Like, I think a team like the Clippers is going to do what they're doing some now. I think a team like the Lakers, I know they beat the Lakers, but I think, again, you see them in a 7-game series. The Lakers could do stuff like simply just play AD at the five, put him on Westbrook, make Westbrook take contested 17-footers, which, as we've seen throughout his entire career, he will over and over and over again. And I just think that ultimately, like, the matchup advantages they'll have are going to stop and start in the first round. But in terms of just like how it's helped Russ, I've liked it.
Yeah, it's really interesting that Russ essentially gets to play the five offensively, where he's in that dunker role and he can just attack the rim at will. I would really, really be interested in reading kind of just a breakdown of the whole process behind the season. Like, I would be curious to find out what role Russ played in kind of designing this role. I'm sure they came to him with it, but just kind of how receptive he was to it. And especially because when you contrast it to OKC, where there was this unapologetic approach that he took to the game, where he's going to play his style. You take the good with the bad. And I think that it was something that obviously worked a lot of the time, but was also probably a little bit of the reason behind the rift with him and KD. Maybe it's just a matter of him being a little closer to Harden, and you have a little bit more buy-in when you really enjoy playing with another guy. But I'm with you on this not being something that's going to be viable come the playoffs, because I think a misconception some people have is that teams really adapt from game to game in the regular season and have tailored game plans. That's just not something that's possible. I shouldn't say it's not possible, because Toronto, for whatever reason, is doing that this season, where they're changing their defensive schemes every single game depending on the opponent. And that's a big part of why I think Nick Nurse should be coach of the year. But when it comes to the Rockets, I just think it catches so many teams off guard, and they get out of what they normally want to do offensively to try to take advantage of the difference in size. And I just can't see that translating to the playoffs.
So in so many words, you're calling them a gimmick, basically.
You know what? Isn't every single offensive approach a gimmick? Like, the Cavs' gimmick was, hey, we have Kyrie and LeBron. We're just going to kind of run a little pick and roll with them. Kyrie's going to set screens. We're going to get mismatches. We're going to get mismatches in creative ways and just take advantage of our talented guys. Everything's a gimmick. I just think this was probably the best use of the assets that they had available, or not, I shouldn't say the best, but close to the best. It's just not going to cut it when you look at some of these other teams.
Yeah, and I mean, I believe so too. And I do think you do have a point where you say, a lot of it is just like you're just catching teams that are not prepared to play that style of basketball. And, you know, like, it's a real thing. Like, you kind of, like, I wouldn't say that NBA is monogamous, but I do think, like, teams want the same things, but they go about it in a very different way. Mm-hmm. But I just think the way the Rockets are such, like, an extreme in what they do, I think, like, it's just hard for even, like, players on the court, like, how they react to certain things. Like, it's just hard for them to kind of change how they react and change how they're used to going through, like, their shell drills and stuff like that. And it's different when guys can literally switch everything right from the jump, and your actions are suddenly just, like, all divulging into, like, ISO basketball because everything's being blown up. Like, mm-hmm. You're right. I do think there is something to that. But in regards to how this all came together, I think you know how this works. Like, if this works and the Rockets are playing in June, there's going to be the big athletic piece about how Russ and James, you know, came over, they pushed Daryl Morey. You have to do this. It has to work. And if it doesn't work and they flame out in the second round, it's going to be the deranged Daryl Morey was desperate, didn't know what he was doing, and just threw something together in a last hurrah. Like, you know how this goes. Like, the winner, like, however this goes is going to be however it actually happens. But I do think this is a little bit of just Morey and Michael D'Antoni believing that they found an inefficiency in the market. And that is that unless you have a 99th percentile big, like your Embiid, your Jokic's, you're not Rudy Gobert, but other great bigs that I can't think of, the drop off between, I don't know, like big number 10, 11 in the year, 10, 11th versus big number 45 to 50. So, like, mm-hmm. let's say the drop off between Steven Adams and Aaron Baines. Like, I don't think it's that huge to justify one guy getting paid $20 million and one guy being on the mid level exception.
I think definitely in how those type of players are compensated, it is an area where you can see a lot of overpays in the NBA. The thing is, I know a lot of people will focus on kind of what Houston's going to be able to do defensively without a big on the floor. And I don't know if that's my issue with this team. My issue, I think, is just that as good as Harden and Russ is, I do think that overall, when you're talking about team basketball, there is a talent gap. And teams being caught off guard, that helps either level the field or give Houston an advantage. And I think as you get to the LA teams or in Milwaukee, that's something that's just not going to be present because everyone's going to focus on the height. But at the same time, this is essentially what the Warriors had with the whole death lineup, because Draymond's 6'6", he's probably shorter than Clay. Harrison Barnes, 6'8", but you're playing without a center, and it was tremendously effective, primarily because those guys, all very solid defenders, and length can kind of be a viable replacement for height if you have guys that are disciplined enough and are that good defensively. I don't think that's why they're going to lose. I just don't think they're as talented as a collective as the LA teams or Milwaukee.
Oh, that's a pretty good take. I don't think they can beat the LA teams either, which I guess puts their ceiling at like the second round, mm-hmm. Barring anything crazy. So yeah, like I think that's it. But I mean, I do think in a crazy world where like they're able to like avoid the LA teams, they can also be like in the Western Conference Finals at the same time.
Yeah, they'd have to get some breaks. It would basically be like the Portland route last year to the Western Conference Finals, right?
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Now, did you agree, though? Because this is now becoming an issue that's important to me, that length can make up for what you might be deficient when it comes to height, because the Cavs obviously are kind of prioritizing guards right now. Kevin Porter Jr. seems to have a little bit of a growth spurt, and it's becoming a topic. Tristan Thompson called him 6'7 the other day, which just warmed my heart. But Sexton, as a guy that 6'1 barefoot, probably plays at about 6'2", 6'3", but he's got a large wingspan, kind of similar to like a George Hill. And if he can maximize that and really make the most of his tools on that end of the floor, maybe, hey, okay, you can start playing him alongside a point guard. He can play as that combo guard. But do you agree that length can be a viable replacement for height, or do you think that there's still a value in height in today's NBA?
I don't think it's either or, because, I mean, the Celtics are doing a similar thing, but, like, instead of, like, guards heavy, it's more, like, wing heavy, where they just don't really – I mean, they have a center, but realistically, they're playing Tice a bunch of minutes. They're playing a guy like Grant Williams at small ball five, and they're really just really banking on their perimeter defense being their best rim protection in a way. So I think there's something to, like, you can kind of replicate height if you're able to – if you are able to kind of guard the perimeter and make it so that you're not relying too much on a shot blocker and stuff like that. So I think you can retool your defense like that. But then also you watch a team like the Bucks and even like the Jazz who like, well, the Jazz more so, where they just funnel everything to Rudy Gobert because they don't have good perimeter defenders, honestly. For those who are tuning in, Mike Conley's not a good perimeter defender. I just hope we can. I don't know why people act like he's this great all around point guard. I have a real problem with that because I feel like.
Do you think that was always the case? Because that would be interesting to me.
I feel like people have always given him a pass. Like the way people talk about like Kyrie, Dame, Kemba, all the top workers in the league, like they get put on this like ladder, like, oh, you have to prove this and this. And Mike Conley just really just skated by in Memphis and was just never kind of checked. And he just, oh, he's so underrated. He's just as good as these guys, just as good as these guys. Well, look at him in Utah, a good team, can't guard nobody. Teams are picking on him on switches every time. I had to get outside my chest. I have a thing against Michael Conley. But anyway.
Really? See, I find this interesting because you agree that he was a good defender at some point, correct?
At some point, he was a good defender. But I think he's fallen off and it hasn't been given, like, the same attention. And I just think overall his place amongst point guards was heavily just been like, oh, he's on Memphis and they're a good little team, grit and grunt. But we're never going to actually, like, criticize him. Like, it's crazy, like the disparity between – someone like him versus like Chris Paul. Yet if you ask people like the difference, they talk about them like they're in the same like tier. It's I don't like the way Mike Conley's covered, but I mean I guess it's ideal for him. But I really digressed. What I'm saying is that you can still also build a defense around bigs and what a team like Utah and even a team like Milwaukee that still uses Brook Lopez pretty prominently show that like you can still do that. So I wouldn't say that it's either or, but I do think that there's a path now, especially in this NBA, for you to kind of like chuck it on getting the traditional center and just playing with more speed on the floor.
Well, you managed to say nice things about the Cavs earlier, but then you went and you attacked Ohio State legend Mike Conley Jr.
So I forgot of that connection. Wow. Now I really don't regret it.
And just a reminder for everybody, at @Kongu_NBA on Twitter, if you got your complaints, you can take them there. But I agree. I think Mike Conley Jr. has kind of skated to some extent. I still wish he didn't get hurt in that series against the Warriors back in 2015, because I think Memphis really would have had a chance there. But they didn't. No, those are the breaks.
I wish Sam was here.
Yeah. I can't imagine those words have been said many times in that order, but I'm sure he would have words on that. But it would have been nice to see Steph in his lone championship if he could have played against a single starting point guard in that entire run for a full series. That would have been great. I really would have enjoyed that.
Damn, I did not say anything on this topic.
It's a somewhat safe space. It's a somewhat safe space. But, okay, so the other part of this game, though, is the Clippers, which is another team that I find fascinating. Are you still all in on them, or do you kind of have some doubts with how this season has gone?
I felt like I initially like about everyone else was like they're definitely the title favorites. Throughout the year, I've not liked it because I've kind of felt I just haven't seen the pop. Like, you kind of see it with, like, championship teams where they just have this moment where they're just, like it happens throughout games. It's not regularly, but, like, they just show you, like, we're at a different level than mm-hmm. you and the rest of the field. And I just wasn't seeing that from the Clippers at all. And they started getting to a point where with the injuries, you have the Athletic writing that big piece on, like, some a little bit the vibe between guys from last year and this year. It started to sound a lot like my team. And suddenly you're just like, whoa. Are they
you just
like,
got, like, NOM flashbacks from that?
Yeah. I was like, oh, are they going to figure this out? Is this going to be what it is? But I think I've kind of, like, stabilized. I've kind of seen them now again with, like, their full roster. With Marcus Morris and just the way they've kind of, like, been handling teams pretty quietly for, like, the last week and a half. So I think I'm back to feeling strong about them. We'll see what happens. I think health is obviously the key theme for them, but now I feel more confident that it is the only theme for them is health and not anything else.
Know what I find interesting? I find it interesting that this actually hasn't come up on NBA Twitter because, I mean, we recycle a ton of topics on a daily basis, and the talking points are often very predictable. I'm a little surprised, all context aside, that Kawhi leaving a team and them having a better record than him on his new team isn't a bigger story. Because I mentioned it earlier, Toronto, in my opinion, Nick Nurse should be coach of the year. They've had a ton of injuries as well. But I do find that fascinating that hasn't been talked about more.
It would have been if they didn't win the title, is what I think. Because I think if you don't win the title, and then you're basically like, oh, I'm off to greener pastures, and then your team is underperforming this team, it's like, oh, so greener pastures, right? Okay. But gotcha. I think when he wins the title, the move is seen more of like, hey, man, I came here. I didn't ask to come here, but I came here. I played hard, unlike some people, Kyrie Irving. And, you know, I won my title and I'm out. And I think it's seen more as like a personal move as opposed to like a basketball decision. So I think that's why people have kind of laid off. But if they lose in the second round and like the Raptors are in the Eastern Conference Finals playing the Bucks, like I'm sure it'll be ignited one way or another.
I'm fairly in on, I guess I'm out, but I'm in on the Clippers coming up short. I guess depending on the matchups, I won't commit to which round I think they'll get eliminated, but I don't think they're going to make it. I have really real injury concerns when it comes to both Kawhi and Paul George. Like, Kawhi was managed a lot last season, and there were times even by the second round where he just couldn't get much lift. And he was phenomenal and he did the most with what he had left in the tank. But I don't think that that's something that's necessarily ever going to go away. And playoff P, as much as he likes to call himself that, you still got outplayed by Joe Ingles in a series. And I'm going to need to see it, as reductive as that argument is. But I also think that chemistry is a big thing. And one of my biggest problems is, as much as they don't care about the regular season, quote unquote, and are built for the playoffs, I do think that there's value in trying to work out different lineups, figure out what works and what doesn't, really get those reps in various situations. I think it helps, like, even from a team building standpoint. Like, I think they would have loved to have more time all together at the trade deadline so they could figure out, okay, when we're actually all together and trying, this player doesn't actually fit as seamlessly as we thought, and this is what our needs are, this is where we're deficient. That never came up because they haven't really had a chance to play together. And Kawhi isn't that type of leader in a vocal sense that can kind of pull things together. So I have my doubts with them.
I can see that, and they're obviously not a perfect team, which I guess is part of what was supposed to make this year so interesting, that there were no perfect teams.
Right.
I guess I have a hard time seeing what team is going to be good enough to actually exploit that in that mm-hmm. way. You know, because yeah. I look at the Lakers, and it's just like, they can obviously be a finals team. It wouldn't surprise me, but I don't like anyone outside of like LeBron and AD, really. I don't trust anyone outside of LeBron and AD.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact that, you know, they're bringing in Dion Waiters and what's probably going to end up happening for Lakers fans is they're going to watch Dion Waiters take out Caruso's minutes. And it's just going to be it's going to be insane on this website. But
God,
yeah, so
that would be so rough.
And then it's like, you look at Denver. I don't trust Denver.
Me
either. I don't trust Utah. I don't trust Dallas. So it's like, I see what you're saying, but then I'm also like, okay, but who's going to do something about it?
Yeah, and I have a gift, which is that I can have conviction with my takes, even in the face of new information. And, I mean, right now they're up 35 on the Rockets after 25. I'm great at math. Anyways, they're really good. When it's all clicking, they're really good. But the thing with them being a flip-the-switch team, I just have some trepidation when Kawhi is the only guy that's ever really shown that he can flip the switch. And a big part of the Cavs in that annoying era where they did not try in the regular season and then would just come out and frustrate good people like Matt Moore with their switch flipping ways. The biggest thing was there were all guys that were kind of either specialists or play well off of LeBron James. So when his effort level increased, it made things easier for everybody else, and they all play well off of him. Kawhi, I don't know him going isolation and hitting mid-range shots. I don't know how that's going to elevate everybody else. So it'll be interesting to see. I agree with you that you look up and down the Western Conference, and basically every team that is in Milwaukee, and there's very real flaws and ways that you can see it either going well or falling apart. Just for whatever reason with the Clippers, maybe it's the fact that it's the Clippers and my brain is that small, but maybe it's that, maybe that's part of why I'm just not buying in on them.
Well, I think you're forgetting one specific thing about the Clippers that I think is a difference here.
What's that?
They signed Marcus Morris Senior, man.
Ooh.
They have the leader. They brought in the senior, the better Morai.
Plus Root Canal Reggie. Like, how can that go wrong?
So instead of Kawhi coming in and dribbling and taking mid-rangers, he can watch Marcus Morris come in and take mid-rangers, and it'll motivate him to try harder.
You know what? You sold me. I'm in on them now. Clips 2K20. This is their year. What do you think is the most annoying NBA Twitter group thing topic of the year so far?
Bucks, man. It started off as like, okay, you're right. You know, like, okay, yes, you're right. We should definitely be talking about your juggernaut team more.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got into like, now it's like a whataboutism thing where it's like any other player does good. And it's just like, yeah, but why don't you talk about Chris Middleton? Oh, but well, when Pat Connaughton does it, no one says anything. Oh, so now when he has 10 blocks, it's a great thing. But how about Brook Lopez and his pass deflections? And it's like, guys, really? You're gonna do this? Like, are you really dying to hear Scottie Pippen and Kendrick Perkins' takes on you on the jump? Is that really what you want? Is that really what you're striving for? Like, just relax. Just win the championship. Enjoy it. Like, before Giannis does you like Kareem did you. Just enjoy it now.
Oh, whoa. So, again, you are stepping on toes here with the podcast. Because, one, good friend Ty Windisch, host of the Eurostep podcast. He's a dedicated listener, and you're going to upset him there. Two, we're also really hoping that they win and Giannis signs a Supermax. One, because I think it's actually going to get a little bit more stability for the rest of the league. I think that it would be good for basketball as a whole. Two, it also, all those teams that are kind of saving cap space for Giannis, they have to start going to plan B and C and D. And that's when the Kevin Love trade market really heats up. So I'm really, really hoping that Giannis signs that Supermax with or without a title.
No, I definitely hear that. But, you know, for Tatum to officially become the best player in the conference, Giannis has to get out of there. So I'm hoping that the Bucks, you know, really, really think about that Andrew Wiggins package. I think it works for both sides.
Isn't it wild that we've reached the point where everything the Warriors does, everything they do, basically, it's got like the Spurs blessing where, man, this has to be genius. I mean, they've clearly done a lot of genius things, but they've also, like every team, fallen backwards into a lot of the stuff. I don't know why we just assume that everything that they do is Teflon.
So, like, okay, I agree. I agree with you, so I'm not about to disagree with you.
But there's like,
but at the same time, it's like, didn't they not play this, like, super well? Like, they basically just got D'Angelo Russell for, well, I mean, they paid him a max, so it's not for nothing. But they got an asset in. They were able to trade him to a team that desperately wanted him for whatever reason. And then now they're going to go into this summer with, like, this contract that they can use to move stuff, plus a lottery pick and then another lottery pick next year, because I'm assuming that.
Dude, I'm so annoyed. I'm so annoyed that the Wolves fought and that they gave up a pick next year instead of this year, because next year's draft is so good. Not just next year's, but the year after that is so good. And it's part of another reason why I want Giannis to stay, is because we got that Bucks first and potentially the double draft, or at the very least, it's a deep, very good draft. But no, it is just wild to me that that's the pick of the Wolves got. They like gave up. Like, I 100%, if I was in their shoes, I'd be trying to dump this year's pick.
Yeah, and I think they did, but I think at a certain point they valued D'Angelo Russell as an asset. Like, I think they see him as the all-star that the Warriors marketed him to be. They just fell for it. So now it's like, whether the Warriors fell into it, they planned it from the jump, whatever it is, they're going to end up now fielding Steph, Clay, Trey next year, and they're going to have, like, lottery picks to play with in the trade market. So
it's so funny. I'm not accusing you of doing this, but it's funny who gets mentioned as or gets the clarification that they were an injury replacement when it comes to All-Star or like anything. Like, anytime that someone mentions Sexton as a rising star, it's always, well, he was an injury replacement, which, one, it was stupid as hell that he wasn't in there in the first place. And two, a lot of it really has to do with the international split. But D'Angelo Russell, like, wasn't he the third injury replacement? And the Wolves are sitting there being like, yeah, that's an All-Star. That guy right there.
Then it's why I was praying Jaylen Brown made the All-Star team. Because once you get that All-Star nod, now all of a sudden, like, when people are like, yeah, you could trade, you know, Jaylen Brown for Karl Anthony Towns, no one bats an eye. Because it's like, oh, yeah, he is an All-Star. Mm-hmm. Getting that All-Star nod is the thing. Like, it's the badge of honor. It doesn't matter how you get there, but you're there. Like,
that's how we traded Mo Williams for Kyrie Irving. Like, that worked out really well for us. Former All-Star.
For sure. So, yes, but to answer your, yes, it is weird how nobody brings that up.
Before we wrap this thing up, what are your thoughts on this year's draft? Because obviously that's a big topic for us. I know it's a down year. This is going to suck. I think everybody is pretty much expecting not to land a franchise changer in this one, but there certainly seems to be guys that are solid starters. Who do you kind of have an eye on with this year's draft on guys that might be able to come in and make a difference?
I like Denny for some reason. I just really like his game. I like wings. I like that. I see a future of him being able to be like a good passer. Whereas, like, mm-hmm. I kind of see like the high floor with him. I also still like RJ Hampton. I feel like he's not now seen as like the universal, like, top five candidate. He kind of, you know, like, that has kind of, that polish has run off. But you just keep hearing like he's like a super coachable kid who works really hard. And I do think kind of like that high, that kind of like playing high school at that high level, like, will mean something. And I think if he goes to the right team, it'll come out. Like, mm-hmm. I think this draft is going to be a lot about situation. And if whoever you draft, whether that's Cole Anthony, especially, I'm blanking on Anthony Edwards.
Yeah.
Especially him, a guy like him. Like, they just need to be in the right situation. And if they're not, like, a lot of their bad habits that people are seeing now are just going to be, like, magnified. by
that, like that's a big part of why I'd be a little scared with Edwards on the Cavs. Like I absolutely see it with him. Like it's, you'd be crazy not to. But I think I would prioritize someone like Okongwu or Denny's up there for sure. Okoro, Hayes. Those are those, like if you're drafting a guard, I think I'd want it to be Hayes. But overall, I just want to start adding some goddamn defense, because I think that's what this team needs more than anything. And if a guy's got a high defensive floor, I think coming out of this draft, if you can get at least a solid starter, you're laughing.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. And I definitely like, Hayes for you guys. I think that's a really, that could be a really good spot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so.
Just gets tricky when we've drafted so many damn guards.
So many.
Just all of the guards, that's the way that we're going. But Alex, I really appreciate your time and you coming on the podcast. It's always very insightful and a lot of fun. Outside of Hoops Island, which again, you guys can support on Patreon. Anything else you want to plug or that you got going on?
Nah. Nothing to plug. I'm just there on the Twitter streets doing my thing. So
way to sell yourself, man. All right. So thanks again, buddy. Really do appreciate it. And a big thanks as well to all of our listeners. Remember, if you want to support us directly, you can do so by subscribing to the Chase Down Premium. Just 99 cents for your first month, $5 a month after that. It's like Patreon, except everything's going to us because we're greedy like that. You can also support us the traditional way by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, and resubscribe, and help cook those books. And if you want in on our Chase Down Discord, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. So a big thanks again to Alex. Go check him out. Go support his work. Thanks to all our listeners. And until next time, go Cavs.